So, Mahindra, thank you so much for doing this. So, the reason why we have you on today is because debt funds, debt markets have suddenly become more action-packed than the equity markets, and a lot seems to be happening along with the equity market. So, people have a lot of questions on their hands. So, we thought we'd get somebody who knows what's happening in the markets to give a little bit of context to the people. But before we get started, so why don't you tell us who you are and what do you do at Mirae?
So, first of all, greetings to everyone. My name is Mahindra Jaju, and I am the CIO Fixed Income for the Debt Products at Mirae Asset Investment Managers. I have been in the market for close to 30 years now, and last couple of decades I have spent in the debt markets. I have been associated with the debt markets from a very early stage in India. And debt mutual funds have now come up as a great option for the investors who are looking to invest in the debt markets. I am a chartered accountant and a company secretary and a CFA by education. And I have been for all my career into the financial services industry.
I just had a follow-up question. So, which is what something I asked a lot of these people. Why debt is? Because debt is not as sexy or exciting as equities. It's a little more sleepy compared to this, but why the debt market space compared to going towards equities?
So it's a little bit of a glamorous side as far as the equity is concerned, but if you look at the country, still a very large proportion of the savings, household savings in particular, is into the debt markets. And then there are things that happen. You don't necessarily choose everything in life. I was actually part of the global markets in ICICI and then in ABN AMRO. And therefore, if you are aware of the institutional side or the banking side of the business, treasury is a fairly, highly glamorous job. And then ABN AMRO floated the mutual fund in 2004, and then they asked me to join the fixed income business. I believe that the mutual funds are the future, and everyone needs to do some job, and fixed income is very promising. It's very exciting, and we have seen a great journey of the equity side of the debt, the mutual fund business in India. And I believe the debt side's time has come, and I feel pretty excited about this role.
So through your career, you've pretty much been through the entire evolution of the Indian debt market, so to speak.
Yes. I mean, to be clear, I started my career in 92 when Dr. Manmohan Singh just unveiled the...
at the interesting moment.
Debt of reforms in India. So I can say that I've been associated from day one of the reform story of India, and I've seen the days when the debt markets used to have TDS for the government bonds, and secondary market was next to non-existent. And then from there on, today we have a huge growth in the debt market. So it has been an exciting journey. And from whatever I have learned during this period, from whatever observation I have, I think there is a huge potential in the debt markets. And clearly the tide is shifting from the conventional debt investment options to more exciting market related options. If I have to summarize the whole change in the complexion of the debt investments in India, we are moving from fixed rate products or from administered products to market related products. And my belief is that the market related products always give you a better return profile and safety than the administered products. And mutual funds, debt mutual funds, for example, are market related products. If market yields go up, you get a different return. And if market yields go down, you get a different return. The issue is that if you can deal with the volatility in the market, it gives you a very fantastic perhaps the best return option. So it creates an option for you. And that's where I think that the debt mutual funds are set to grow further.
No, absolutely. That's the hope, that people move away from all those old school products that they're used to. So the next thing I actually wanted to do is set the context so that people have sort of a base to understand the later part of the conversation. So when we're talking about debt markets, we hear a lot of these fancy terminologies, interest rate risk, credit risk, duration risk, so on and so forth. So what are those three, four important things that investors should know so that three, four concepts that they should know about so that they know what's happening in the debt markets, they know what's happening with the debt fund, and you know how to make sense of the daily fluctuation in the price. So just the basic concepts that people should know about.
Yeah. So again, you know, let's say Zerodha is one of the most exciting developments that has happened in the markets recently, and you guys have taken over the space like no one else. And now you're talking about debt. So I think there is some importance about the debt. And then when it comes to debt, I think there is a lot of lack of appreciation of some of the nuances of the debt business. And then when I interact with the investors, normally people say, look, when I want to learn about basics of debt, we want to understand what is duration, what is the convexity, how is the relationship between the yields and the price of a bond. Those are the technical side. I would say that there are those technical sides on the equity side also. You have the dividend discounting model, then you have the cash flow discounting and the cash flow projections, etc. From an investor's perspective, I would focus on three parts. The basics of debt investing that they must appreciate. Historically in India, investors in debt focus on safety of capital and then on the return. So the mindset that has been incubated in our psyche is that when you invest in debt, it should never be that the capital goes into negative. The fact of the markets is that markets are always going to be volatile, and market offers an opportunity from time to time. And people who understand the markets and why the volatility is there can take advantage of that. In particular, as far as the interest rates are concerned, interest rates are cyclical in nature. The classic interest rate cycle is that when there is high inflation, high demand, or a heating up economy, the central banks would try to put a brake so that there is no disruptive movements in the market. So interest rates tend to go up. And then because of the central bank action, like the Fed is trying to do now by raising rates, they are trying to control inflation. Eventually the inflation will come down and then the Fed will again start easing rates. So this cycle is where the maximum opportunity is in debt. So if you just visualize that markets are going up and down, you have an option to invest in a instrument which gives you a fixed predictable return, or you can invest in a product which gets advantage from this volatility. So compare a classic bank fixed deposit with a bond fund. Historically, bond funds have given a higher return than a fixed deposit because bonds can benefit from the situation when the interest rates go up, and when the investments made at the time when the rates have gone up, when the rates come down, that gives capital gains also. So historically speaking, the debt mutual funds have given, especially the bond funds which have longer duration paper, higher return than the classic traditional products. The second advantage that the mutual funds have is the tax benefit, because the more than 3 year investments at this point in debt mutual funds are eligible for long-term capital gain benefit, which is not available in any other debt product. So that's a huge incentive, because the tax rate difference can make a huge return difference to your eventual return. And then there is an element of credit risk, because whatever investments you make, eventually if the company to which you have lent money does not return it on time, then there is a huge impact on your final return. So therefore, when you are investing in debt, more than getting into the technical side of what is duration, what is convexity, which way interest rates are heading, people should focus on three simple things. One, don't be afraid of volatility. Try to take advantage of the volatility. How can you take advantage of the volatility is exactly how we take it in the equity side. Do an SIP in a bond fund or invest for a full interest rate cycle. Interest rates go up and then they come down. So if you hold any fund for, let's say, a 3-year period, which is typically a complete interest rate cycle, you will have a day when your actual returns will be higher than your target return. And that is the day to review your investment. Second is stick to high credit quality, because if someone defaults, then all your return calculations are off the table. And third is invest for long term. Invest on a goal-oriented basis and be aware of the inflation, because the returns have to be higher than the inflation for your purchasing power to remain intact and improve. So if you interest rates are administered in most of the markets, they may not be administered in terms of the old times, but central banks do keep a very strict control on where the debt markets are. And for the last 10-15 years, the central banks have been extremely dovish. In a number of cases, the market rates are lower than the inflation level, which means the real interest rates, as we call, are negative, which means your purchasing power is depleting. So if you are investing, let's say, for 10 years and you want to buy a house at the end of 10 years, and you put it in a bank deposit at 5%, and if the house prices appreciate by 8%, then you will not be able to achieve your target. So you need to invest in a way which beats the inflation in the asset class that you want to invest or for whatever purpose you are investing. And for that, you have to invest in a market-related product, and which is where I think the debt mutual funds come into play.
Got it. Makes sense. Just to summarize, don't worry about volatility. Stick to high-quality credit. So that means either G-Secs, state development bonds, or AAA rated papers, and don't do anything fancy, and SIP works. Got it. So the next question, I think it's pretty much been on people's mind, is in the last 2 years, we've seen phenomenal returns in the equity markets. The markets have gone up 100-150%. What's the point of investing in debt funds which are giving me 2%? So what role does a debt fund play in my portfolio?
So theoretically speaking, if equity has given the highest return, then 100% of the portfolio should be in equity. But then there are multiple reasons why people need to have a diversified portfolio. Because if you put all your eggs in one basket, and if that basket for some reason goes wrong, then I think the end result is not achieved. The second is the risk appetite. Not everyone has the same risk appetite. Some people by their built-up or construction are not very amenable to high volatility and high risk in the portfolio. And then in a classic investing situation, people need to have diversified portfolio. So let me just give an example that in March 2020, when COVID broke out, Nifty fell to 7,000.
Right.
And that was like multi-year low. A lot of people could have panicked. People could have planned something. So if that time someone had invested in debt, then he could have either have a better stability in the portfolio, or the most important thing is that at that point he could have used that debt money into averaging his investments in equity. But assume that someone was planning to go for higher studies abroad, and that happened in that month, his entire plan would have got off the track. So I think the classic way to look at why to invest in debt, or for that matter in gold or in property, is to diversify your investments so that if there is a extraordinary development in one asset class, you get the protection because of the diversification. The other is to reduce the overall standard deviation, which is the technical name for volatility in your portfolio. So I think just the return is one aspect of the investing. The overall purpose of investing is basically two. One is to either create wealth for future or to invest for a particular objective. Both this be achieved only if you have a diversified portfolio. Putting all your eggs in one basket can lead to results which are significantly different from the intentions.
No, fair point. So that behavioral aspect of debt funds helping you stick through tough times, I think it's highly underrated when people are looking at it purely from a returns perspective. So now, to the question that that's been on people's minds. So why are my NAVs falling for the last, let's say, 3-4 months? What's happening? Why are my debt funds negative? My debt funds are always supposed to go up. They're not supposed to fall. What's happening?
No, that's what I was trying to emphasize, that look, if you invest in a debt mutual fund, these are market related product and market prices change, market yields change. So there is an inverse relationship between the price of a bond and the market yield. So if the interest rates go up, the bond prices will fall, and therefore the NAV can show a lower return or a negative return depending on how big is the market movement. If you had, on the other hand, invested in a bank fixed deposit or a fixed rate bond, the value will not change in your books. But if you were to do the mark to market for the same bank fixed deposits, its value on that particular day would have been the same, would have been different. So let's assume that you buy a mutual fund which has a portfolio with a YTM of about 5%. And then you invest in a bank fixed deposit, which also gives you 5% return. Now, tomorrow, if the yields go to 6%, because we mark to market the portfolio, the value of the bonds in my portfolio will be lower because of the application of the 6% discounting factor rather than the 5%. And therefore, the NAV will be lower. The fixed deposit will be unchanged in the investor's book, but if you were to revalue the cash flow of the fixed deposit also from 5 to 6%, it will show the same depreciation. Now, what is the difference between the two? In case of a fixed deposit, you are locked in, but in case of a mutual fund, the fund manager has a pool of assets. On the day that the yields go to 6%, somebody else may be investing in that fund, or somebody may be redeeming. The fund manager will be able to lock in some assets at 6% also, higher yields also. So overall, the volatility that we see in that market, it's going to eventually benefit the fund. We have seen so many examples where people panic and they redeem from the mutual funds. So if you look at the long-term history of the debt mutual funds, they have given a return which is higher than the corresponding locked-in investments at that point in time. So the NAV has been coming down because the market yields are going up. Now, market yields are going up because the inflation across the world has moved higher. In the US today, the inflation is close to 9%. And the Fed is hiking rates. So that is having the impact. But there are two ways to look at it. One is to panic and say, look, why my NAV has come down. The other is that, look, this is creating an opportunity to invest at higher yields, the phrase investment. So if I give you an analogy, that's what we tell people, or that's what we hear advisors say to investors, that if equity markets have corrected, it is a good time to lock in fresh money, etc. So I think the other similarity which I would like to say, that in equities market also, it doesn't matter where the equity markets go. If you invest in a stock which collapses, then you will get very poor returns, and which is why I emphasized on the credit risk factor, that it doesn't matter which way the interest rates go. If you invest, if you happen to end up investing in a company which defaults or which is not able to repay, then your returns will be very poor. So it is important to invest in a high quality portfolio, but the interest rate volatility is something that should not worry anyone. If you look at the, most happening event right now in the market, the IPO of the LIC. Now, that is amongst the largest financial institutions in the country, and they are also amongst one of the largest debt investors in India.
Right.
They are one institution which gives guaranteed returns. So you see, they will keep investing when interest rates go up or go down. They create a portfolio and therefore they are able to provide good returns to the investors. So I think interest rate volatility is caused by multiple factors, primarily because of the inflation and the pace of the economic activity. But that is something which the approach should be to take advantage of rather than feeling scared about it.
Got it. So just to be clear, so when RBI made the 40 basis point rate hike, and we saw depending across categories anywhere between 0.5% to 1.5% fall in NAVs. So this was because interest rates rose up, and that means the NAVs fall down. But if an investor were to hold throughout the interest rate cycle, that means he'll pretty much end up on the right side.
Absolutely. I mean, look, this is not the first time the RBI has hiked the rates, right? This.
Now, for all the people who came through in June, the new investors, this is the first time I think they're seeing a rate hike cycle. I think to some extent, all these new investors might be a little panicked.
No, that I think is a fair point, and they are right in panicking. But I don't think panicking is the solution. I think when they have invested at that time also, I think it was well expected that the rates might go up. Or even if, let's say, somebody invests today, knowing that the rates are going up, is it the right thing to do? So we have something called the risk return profile. And then we have the second thing, which is the risk profile of the investor. So if the interest rates have gone up and those investors are panicking, they need to check whether their risk profile is geared to handle this situation. And as long as the risk profile is able to handle this situation, I think they will end up in a happy situation a few years down the line. There are times when, let's say, for example, right now, while the interest rates have gone up, we're also expecting the, a lot of people would also expect volatility in the equities market. Equities market have fallen 10, 15, 20% from the top in different markets or different stocks. So do you just clean up all your stocks or do you panic? No. The same analogy applies to the debt market. Just because the interest rates have gone up and your returns may be negative for a few days, that's not something to worry. As long as it is in line with your risk profile and in line with your objectives of that investment. But if somebody is taking an interest rate call that has gone wrong, he should exercise stop loss or not. Those are the things. But I think we need to make a clear distinction between investors who are long-term in nature and who have the ability to withstand this periodic volatility episodes. They, I think, need not worry.
Got it. So I have a really dumb question. So now that my NAVs have fallen, so you're saying that if I just stick through, so like how long should I hold my debt fund before my NAVs recover? So how do you answer this question?
Look, we don't know for how long this situation remains, right? The classic interest rate cycles are around 3 years, right? And 3 years is when the tax benefit of long-term capital gain also kick in a debt mutual fund investment. So first is that the inflation continues to be high, interest rates will continue to go up, and therefore the NAVs may remain negative for some time, they may actually fall more. Now, we also discussed that interest rates are cyclical in nature. So interest rates will go up and then they will come down. So when the interest rates are going up during the up cycle, I think the idea should be to keep on adding to your investments so that your average investment yield keeps going up. And then when the interest rates peak and they start coming down, then you start enjoying the benefit of capital gains and therefore end up with good returns. Now, for how long the rates will go up, we don't know because markets are unpredictable. If you look at the current situation, one can expect that interest rates will continue to be on an upward movement for next 1 year or maybe more. But will that be a reason to be panic, or will that reason to not add, or will that be a reason to redeem? I think from our perspective as portfolio managers, from a long-term investor's perspective, this should be considered as an opportunity to add to your investments at higher and higher rates, and then have patience for the interest rate cycles to turn. Therefore, I think that rather than taking a call on how far or how longer can interest rates go higher, it is better to take a call on how am I equipped to deal with this. Is it going to be a permanent loss for me, or is it going to be an intermediate period of turbulence for me? So it's like when you are on a flight and there is turbulence, do you think in terms of landing, or do you think pressing? So I think from our perspective, these episodes are more like turbulence during a flight, and we don't worry too much about it. For individual investors who don't understand this, or who understand this but are not able to emotionally digest that, these challenges are there. Of course, I will not discount the possibility of investors who might have taken a investment without understanding what its implication is. So, for example, if someone has taken a opportunistic call, he might have thought that interest rates at 7%, for example, 10-year looks good, and now it has gone to 7.40. Then I think it out, because it is not in fitment with his risk profile and the investment objective. So you need to make a distinction between investors who have come with a long horizon and understanding of what's happening versus people who might have taken an opportunistic call.
No, I like I really like the idea that you said. So that when the equity prices are falling, you are expected to go and buy the dip. And buy the dip has been kind of the slogan for the past 2 years. And investors are better off having the same mindset when it comes to debt funds. So just keep investing through SIPs according to your goals.
And the only thing is, like in equity markets, Nifty might make a new high, but every stock may not. So the stock selection, and here also the portfolio selection, is very important. If you happen to invest in a poor quality portfolio, then that may be a red flag. It's important to maintain high quality credit portfolio.
Absolutely. I have a few follow-up questions on the portfolio part, but before that, like you mentioned, the US Fed is in a rate hike cycle. They just did a 50 basis point hike. Bank of England, Japan, pretty much all the developed markets, EM markets, are in a rate hike cycle. So globally, since that we are in some kind of a synchronized rate hike cycle, so how does this affect India? Does that mean all these pressures will also ensure that we remain in a rate hike cycle for the foreseeable future without putting, start and end dates to this cycle?
Absolutely no doubt about that, because see, India today is so well integrated with the global market. So that is one reason. The primary reason why we cannot be immune to the global developments is that India is a country by construct having a large current account deficit, which means in simple language, our imports are far more than our exports. And then we have software exports, etc., etc. If you put them all together also, so goods and services put together, our imports are more than the exports. Therefore, we need to have foreign capital every year to balance our currency, balance of payment account. So if we stop getting FPI money or the FDI money or foreign capital in some way, then that will lead to currency depreciation, that will lead to higher inflation because of the higher cost of import and so on. And therefore, historically, if you look back to the past, whether it was in 1999 or 2003 or 2008 or in 2013, the periods of the maximum turbulence in our markets, including in fixed income markets, have been when the global markets have been turbulent or they have gone into a disruptive mode. In COVID situation also, we had the same situation. Now, what has happened over a period of time, that India as an economy has been growing, and the composition of our economy has also been moving towards higher value-added products, and therefore we have been getting a lot of the FDI, and that has been able to give us a good strength. Our forex reserves are now $600 billion plus. but we still need that capital. So if the global investors stop investing in our markets, then there will be challenge. Now, why would they stop investing in our markets? Can be for two reasons. One is that if India has a problem, so today India has no problem. India is perhaps the economy where everybody is looking to invest and expects good results. But there can be other challenges in their home market. Suppose if because the Fed is hiking rates, if the FPIs will be invested in India, their investors start redeeming, then they need to take the money out of the country. So we have historically seen a huge outflow from the emerging markets when the Fed is tightening liquidity.
Right.
And that could compel, in turn, the FPIs to redeem. If, let's say, for example, and that's what was the narrative in the market, if the global interest rates are going up and RBI is not hiking rates and the interest rate differentials become too high, investors from overseas may be tempted to take the money back to other markets which are more attractive. So there are multiple reasons, primarily being our dependence on the foreign capital and the fact that the FPIs are already such a large part of our market on the equity side, as also on the debt side. And if they decide to take out the money because they don't like the domestic setup for whatever reason, then that can cause a big problem. And therefore, we cannot be immune to the global developments, including the global monetary policy setup or the global interest rate cycle. And therefore, I think that with a lag, but the overall direction for our markets will be similar to what's happening in the global markets. Therefore, just to conclude, if Fed is continuously going to hike rates, I don't think we can escape that. We will have to also be part of that same system.
Got it. From your vantage point, so we are seeing, you know, inflationary pressures across the board, not just in India, but across the globe. Do you guys have any sense of what's causing this? Because up until 2019, we were okay, but then we had the lockdowns, and then post the reopening, we have seen all sorts of issues, from supply chain issues, shortage of goods, shortage of labor, so on and so forth. Like, is this purely like a supply-driven phenomenon, or is it both supply and demand? Because demand is also pretty much, it's been solid across the board.
So in my view, the supply chain disruption is one factor which is causing inflation. There are two very important other factors. One is that you will see that inflation has primarily come in the developed market. So you look at US, Europe. I mean, Europe is an economy which is so sluggish.
Absolutely.
But still they have now close to 8% inflation. Countries like Australia, which are commodity exporters, they don't need to have inflation. They should be very prosperous. But in the COVID period, the Western governments undertook a huge fiscal expansion program. So in 2020 and 21, most of the Western governments incurred 10-15% of the GDP as fiscal deficit. Now, where did that money go? That money went into supplementing the salary income loss of the individuals. That money went to the small and medium enterprises to continue to pay salary and not fire their employees. That money went into rent replacement or rent supplement checks to people who were otherwise going to be vacated from their house for their inability to pay rent. So the paralyzing of the economy due to COVID, at least in the early phase, led to huge spending by the governments, and that money came to the, you know, in the form of demand in the coming months. So that is one. Now you look at 2008 to 2019, most of the global central banks had done huge monetary accommodation, but that did not result in inflation, because that money did not get absorbed in the broader economy.
Right.
So there was no spending, and that liquidity always remained parked with the central banks and excess reserve. So that is one factor. Therefore, if you see, the moment COVID broke out in 2019, first the inflation in global markets came down, and then the inflation phenomenon started happening around early 2021. So it's the last 3 months. In US, the inflation was around 1.5% in January 21. Now it is at 9%. The second reason I think inflation has come back is because of this extra liquidity that the central banks let remain in the system. The commodity prices took off, and we had one of the strongest commodities bull market in the last 1.5 months. So we had aluminium, steel, everything go very, very high. And then I'll just give you a little bit of insight into where the supply chain disruption comes. The supply chain disruption became a serious issue in the second COVID wave, because if you recall February, March, April 21, when the second wave was there, May, that was the time when the US and the other Western markets like Germany, etc., were beginning to open up, because they had the threshold approaching for the vaccination, etc., and the COVID cases had begun to ease down. So they started to open up. But that was the time when some of the Southeast Asian countries like Vietnam, Philippines, Malaysia, Thailand, they had their worst outbreak of COVID at that time. In 19, they did not suffer as much as in 21. So you have a situation where the Western economies are opening up, which are the biggest importers of the from these countries, and these countries were shutting down. So there was a huge supply chain disruption because these countries are shutting down, and that's why you see that in the second wave, while India was a big sufferer, the industrial companies continued to operate even during the COVID-2 lockdown, which is why our exports suddenly took off. So our exports have been coming down and were very sluggish for last 5 years. But in last 1 year, our exports have grew at a very rapid pace, 40-50%, and we touched 40 billion of exports last month, which is the highest ever that we have done. So suddenly the complexion, India was a big beneficiary of those countries closing down. And then that supply chain disruption had continued. And finally, in the last couple of months, we had the fresh disruption owing to the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. Now, those are the two countries which supply a large part of the food items like wheat, etc., to the rest of the world. So even if the dispute is resolved today, Ukraine will not be able to harvest the wheat crop, and therefore this disruption is likely to continue. And this disruption is now affecting not only the other items, but the basic necessities. So food chain is disrupted. Then Russia manufactures some of the important chemicals required for fertilizer, so food and fertilizers. And then Russia is one of the largest exporters of petroleum, petrol and gas, for the energy. So the three core basics of life, food, fertilizers and energy, has been challenged. And therefore, now the expectation is that this inflation will remain elevated for a while, and which is why we are now seeing a synchronized rate hike cycle led by this inflation at the moment.
The world suddenly seems like a much scarier place than it was just 2 years ago. Now, just shifting gears, I just want to pick your brains a little bit about how investors should go about investing in such a rate hike. So now that we are firmly in a synchronized rate hike cycle, as you mentioned, so what should be what should investors do, and what, more importantly, what shouldn't they do in a rising rate environment?
I think the first thing the investors need to do is to understand their risk profile and their objective for investment. As I said, it's something like, look, if you ever fly in during the monsoon times, I'll go back to my favorite analogy. It happened once, we had a flight which was highly turbulent flight. So once the flight landed, everyone was very relaxed that finally the turbulence is over and we are okay. Then on the way out of the plane, I just happened to say hi to the pilot, and then I said, how do you feel? He said, I'm just preparing for my return flight on the same route, right? We as a portfolio manager in a debt market, we are used to this volatility and we are not scared of it. We know where this is an opportunity and where this is a reason to be cautious. So that way, like the pilot is not only not bothered about the turbulence, he's preparing for the return flight with the next batch of passengers. For us, one investor will redeem, another will come. Will either be panicking or not having the risk profile for this environment. So I think it's very important. I've tried to make a little, make it a little light, but I think it's very important to understand the risk profile. From my perspective, yes, this interest rate hike cycle is just about starting. So maybe people should take a little cautious view and invest in short duration funds. So if you invest in funds like ultra short term fund or low duration fund, which typically have between 3 to 1 year of maturity, there is a lot of protection there. Even if the rates go up, a lot of papers will mature in the next 6 to 9 months, and fund managers will be able to invest at a higher rate. So I normally bifurcate, or not bifurcate, but divide the investors in three categories. Investors who do not have the risk appetite and who do not have the risk investment horizon or investment horizon, they should stick to the liquid funds, ultra short term fund, or the low duration fund, so that they have a reasonable confidence about the good return without too much of volatility. Then there are second set of investors who are long term in nature and who will have recurring surplus to invest. They can actually go in the SIP mode. So they should not even look at the markets on a daily basis. They should remain invested, and they should continue to add as the rates go up, because the interest rates are cyclical in nature, and therefore once the cycle is complete and then it starts to ease again, they will see very good results. I'll just give an example of 2018 to 2019. The interest rates went up from 6% in 2017 to around 9% in 2019, and then they came back to 6% in 2020. So the people who invested during that phase made 10% plus return. The people who got out somewhere got different results. So what I'm again trying to emphasize, interest rates are cyclical in nature. Now, what is the risk that interest rates continue to go up and then never come down? That can happen. So you can take example of many countries which actually defaulted and so on and so forth. But India is a country which is fundamentally still showing a lot of improvement. India's fundamentals remain strong. So therefore, this is a season where the inflation is high because of different factors, and the central banks are coming from a situation of having taken the interest rates to a very low level because of the COVID disruption. So the early phase of the tightening cycle is sounding a little bit too fast-paced, but then that also creates an opportunity for the new investors. So just to summarize, people who have a structural allocation to fixed income, they should remain invested, not worry too much about the market movement, except that they should focus on high quality portfolio, not get lured by higher yields on weaker credit quality papers. People who have no appetite or who are very sure they don't want anything but a fixed return can look at the shorter term one. Then you have people who are investing based on their market view, or based on their understanding, or they want to take a tactical call. For them, I think right now, clearly the interest rates are heading higher in my view, and therefore right now they need to have a pause and wait for better market environment to start investing.
Got it. Now, to your point about, people sticking, the need for people to stick to lower quality, lower duration funds, so there's a general advice in the market that if you don't know what you're doing, if you don't know much about debt funds, or if you don't have the ability to take tactical calls, can short-term funds become the core part of your allocation, and so that regardless of the interest rate cycle, and you can just continue to invest in them no matter what happens to the interest rates?
Absolutely. I mean, you just look at the last 25 years. What has not happened in the last 25 years, right?
Right.
We had the change of government. We had the, social instability. We had the rating downgrade, and we had a recession, and we had the global financial market crisis. And what is the result of the last 25 years? 25 years back, interest rates were 15% in India, and now they are in the region of 6 to 8%. Why that has happened is because India's economic strength and fundamentals have continued to improve. If that continues to happen, the interest rates will move in the inverse direction and eventually come down. The second is that we had so many episodes of turbulence in the fund industry. What has happened is that some fund houses have gone out, some funds have closed, but the funds who have survived have given returns which are very attractive from a long-term perspective. So the longer you look at the history, and that is a guide, you see that ultimately the people who had the staying power and the right choice of the investments survived. I mean, if the only difference between someone who is a billionaire today and someone who is a pauper is whether in 99 he chose to retain his holdings of Infosys or DSQ software. So, which is why I put so much focus on having high quality portfolio. So if you just make the right choice, then I think the market volatility is not something to worry about. So you choose any fund, but if you're going to invest for a long term, then you want to be rewarded for being a long term investor. Therefore, you will put money in bond funds because they have the potential to give you the highest return in the long term.
Got it. So just following up on that point, let's say, for example, I am somebody who is 25 or 30 and I have some additional surplus so that I can invest every month in, you know, whatever fixed debt fund. But the problem today is there are 16 categories of debt fund, and that's just a nightmare for most people. Are there any rules of thumb or like basic guidelines so that most investors who just want to invest monthly and forget about everything else, they don't want to take interest rate calls, they don't want to do all this fancy tactical stuff. Are there any categories they can, you know, straight away ignore? And are there any categories that just, you know, those 5-6 categories that should be part of their, you know, screening process?
I think that's a very good question, because that is one area where we keep on getting a lot of questions that, you know, how do I choose which categories to choose? So it is important to understand why there are 16 categories, right? Generally, the risk in the debt side is measured in terms of the age of the instrument. So the longer the instrument, it's supposed to carry higher risk, and then the credit risk, because the poorer the credit quality, the higher the possibility that the company can default. So there is a historical background to why do we have the 16 categories, because mutual fund industry has evolved over the last 25 years, and during this time different products were invented, but then when the consolidation happened, the funds were bifurcated in order of the maturity, and then there are a couple of categories which go by the credit rating. So I think the investors can broadly define themselves again into three categories: short term, medium term, long term. And I think you can pick one in each category. So I would say that if I'm a short term investor, I mean, basically transactional investor, I'll look at something like, you know, liquid fund or a low duration fund. So two funds in that category. Then somebody is in the medium, you know, horizon zone, then he can look at a short duration fund, because short duration fund have a regulatory obligation to maintain duration between 1 to 3 years. So they can't be too much out of the market and they can't be participating too aggressively in the market. So that's the safety that the regulations provide. And then if somebody is a long-term investor, then you have range of funds, bond funds, corporate bond fund, banking PSU fund, you know, the medium duration fund. I think if one picks a banking and PSU debt fund, then that addresses most of these areas. So he can cut the clutter and focus on these three and say, look, if I'm short term, medium term, long term, I'll get into this.
Oh, I really love the framework. So that, I think that should help, you know, investors, you know, get over the question of, oh my God, there are 16 categories, I don't know what to do. That was really helpful.
I'll tell you something. You go to you just go to a TV, you know, you go to buy a TV. So there are so many TVs. So each TV has one feature, this one. So now you broadly look at the TV with the thing that I want to be 70 inches or 55 inches or 32 inches. And then you have every little feature added on. Or you even just go to a coffee shop, they'll say basic coffee, then coffee with extra cream, with coffee with this. So there are these subtle variations in each part of the life that we get into. And we have a very clear choice there that this is what I want to do. I want a TV, I want this, and for this feature, there's so much extra. So in debt funds also, I think the life is simple. There are so many funds with similar characteristics. You just need to choose one. So I'll tell you, my guide is that there are funds at the longer term, which have a maturity range defined by SEBI, and then the funds which are given the credit quality prescription, right? So I will choose a fund which has a range for the duration. So as I said, why in the short term, short duration? Because 1, 2, 3. So you know the bound of how things move. Similarly, if you go to that side, you have defined. So if you look at the banking and PSU fund, what we see is that the in the long term, what is most important is the credit quality. So if it is a banking and PSU debt fund, you are largely investing in a highly regulated and protected sector. So the chances of things going wrong on the credit side on that are lower than in other segments of the debt market. And then they have largely a tilt towards the longer duration horizon, but they don't have an exact prescription. So when you're investing in the long term, you want to maximize your return. So you want to give the flexibility to the fund manager to calibrate its portfolio in line with the interest rate environment. So you will get the best results in my view if this is how you choose. Now there are so many similar looking options which can confuse you, but if your objective is clear, then I think this is how you make that one.
Got it. No, I just had one final follow-up question on that credit part. I mean, you know better than anybody this popularity of credit risk funds among retail investors for all the wrong reasons, and I personally am not a huge fan of that category for retail investors to begin with. Is the best advice that retail investors should stay away from these credit risk funds outright?
My personal view will be yes, because credit risk funds can be good choice at a certain cycle of the market. Suppose when the credits are priced very defensively, or the credit cycle has kind of come to a bottom. So you look at last 1.5 years post the ILFS crisis, credit risk funds were one of the better performing ones. So, but those are more, I think, appropriate for sophisticated investors. If you define retail investors to not necessarily have the understanding of the intricacies of the interest rate cycles and credit cycle, I would say avoid. Again, if you look at the long-term track record, they have not given you the return commensurate with the extra risk profile. So
that's one point that people miss out. You know, they think that higher risk leads to higher returns, which hasn't really played out, even if they're compared to, let's say, the short-term funds.
So in my view, given the fact that exposure to credit risk funds requires far deeper understanding of the interest rate and credit cycle, and the historical return profile does not justify the extra risk taken, I would say that for retail investors, they can stay away from the
Got it. I hope people take that point specifically. I just had a few questions about you personally. So what's your broad investment philosophy, be it with equities or be it debt? How do you look at this when you're investing your own money?
So professionally, I invest, of course, in the, manage the debt funds. And my philosophy is nothing different from what I have said over the last, hour or so. I pretty much manage funds in line with the respective fund mandate and regulations. And within this framework of having active management style with the focus on high quality portfolio. When it comes to personal life, I'm like anyone else, like any other salaried person, guided by the standard prescription. So I allocate my savings into equity, debt, and other asset classes. And I am a big fan of SIP investments because I think the best results come if you don't look at your portfolio for 10 years, but knowing that no individual stock will go wrong. So I personally feel for people who don't have the sophistication direct investing in equity mutual funds, for me, that has been so just for all practical purposes, majority of my investments are in mutual funds, different types. That has worked well for me.
Got it. So this is one question I ask whenever I'm speaking to people, who have been in the industry for a long time. Like over your investing career, be it with your own money or through your professional investments, is there any mistake that kind of stands out in your head that in hindsight, you should have done it differently or something like that? It need not be a mistake, something, that broadly sticks out in terms of.
I think it may surprise you or it may not surprise you, but I think there are two fundamental mistakes that I think I could have done differently. One is that early investing is very important. The day you want, you should start investing. Always save some part of your income. And then I think one has to be very optimistic about future. You know, every time there is a bout of volatility in the market, or, you know, we say, oh, ye jyada ho gaya, ye kam ho gaya, to bahut ho gaya. I think my best, you know, I always say that my best outcomes have been where I have made the investment and forgot about it. So I think that lesson to me has always been that, look, the more you want to time the market, then, you know, the chances are that the results will not be very good. And which is why I put so much focus on that. And what I find very funny is that people, and, you know, best of the, you know, brains that I've met, that they say, look, when it comes to equity, please don't time the market. Timing in the market is more important than time in the market. Don't worry about the volatility in the market. And then the same people, when it comes to debt, their first question is, what is your interest rate view? And I say, no, it doesn't matter. So I think there is a huge dichotomy between how people look at, you know, equity and how people look at debt. So I think that philosophy has to change. And if anyone can time the market, I mean, just think about it. 1990 to 2020, Nifty was at 7,000. I mean, if you can time the market, please go there. You know, you can lose money. So I think the people have to get over this thought process of their first reflex reaction is interest rates are going up. Should I invest now or not? I say, look, if you are an investor, the day-to-day market movement should not matter to you. The immediate outlook should not matter to you because we don't really know what will happen. But we should have an active approach that if things change, if new developments happen, we change our strategy. So invest with a fund or a vehicle where they have a flexible approach to investing, and let the professionals do the job. That has worked well for me.
Are there any, you know, books, movies that have shaped your thinking profoundly, or, you know, some must read books for the people who are listening to this?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not much of a movie fan, so there isn't any particular movie per se, but I think there are some individuals in public life who motivates you. And I think by naming one and not naming so many more
people,
to them, but I think I get more inspiration from people in public life. And one thing that has impressed me a lot about our country is that if you look at the top guy in any field, you know, whether it is Sachin Tendulkar in cricket,
right,
or whether it is, people like Akshay Kumar, or, you know, if you look at Narendra Modi, I mean, people in every sphere of our country have come from very humble background. Right. So this country gives an opportunity, in spite of all the perception, all tourism, all things, you look at the top guy in any field, you look at Mahendra Singh Dhoni, they are all from humblest of the background. And that, I think, is the reason to be extremely optimistic in our country. And also, when those kind of people come to the, you know, power or the position of that prominence, which means that the rest of the country will also do well. And therefore, I said, we have to be more optimistic in life. So that was one mistake which I made, that I was not optimistic enough and therefore not aggressive enough in investing in my early life. I think everyone should follow that.
Thank you so much, Mahendra, for doing this. This is absolutely phenomenal. I personally learned a lot. I'm pretty sure everybody who listens to this will have plenty of takeaways, not just with their investing, but for other aspects of life as well. We really hope that, you know, we'll get to have you sometime soon back on the show. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much for your time and inviting me today. Thank you so much.
The information contained herein is compiled from third-party and publicly available sources and is included for general information purpose only. There can be no assurance and guarantee on the yields. Views expressed by fund manager cannot be construed to be a decision to invest. The statements contained herein are based on current views and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties. Whilst Mirae Asset Investment Manager India Private Limited, the AMC, shall have no responsibility or liability whatsoever for the accuracy or any use of reliance thereof of such information. The AMC, its associate or sponsors or group companies, its directors or employees, accepts no liability for any loss or damage of any kind resulting out of the use of this document. The recipients, before acting on any information herein, should make his or her or their own investigation and seek appropriate professional advice, and shall be alone fully responsible or liable for any decisions taken on the basis of information contained herein. Any reliance on the accuracy or the use of such information shall be done only after consultation to the financial consultant to understand the specific legal, tax, or financial implications. Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all the scheme-related documents carefully.